This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we're all on this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast or email info@botfpodcast.com. My 4-year-old absolutely loves the movie Frozen. From the music, to the magic, to the danger, he could watch this movie 3 times a day and not get sick of it. Thankfully, his mama is a Disney kid at heart, but I still can only handle it maybe 3 times a week. When the stay-at-home order began, Disney graciously, or maybe maliciously, depending on who you ask, released the streaming of Frozen 2 on Disney+. Of course, my family sat together and watched the first of many encores the night it became available. One of the songs that really struck me was called The Next Right Thing. Distraught at the loss of her sister and therefore the trajectory she thought her life was going to take, Anna sings about trying to move forward by just doing the next right thing. That became my mantra throughout this whole coronavirus ordeal. I currently have 0 proof of this, but I believe my journey with corona began in February. I had a random fever for a couple of days, and the other symptom was feeling like I got hit by a truck, which lasted a lot longer than the typical flu. My 13-month-old daughter, on the other hand, was the sickest baby I've ever had in my care. It got actually kind of scary for a moment there. This included 2 weeks of caring for her and myself, as well as trying to keep on top of my normal daily responsibilities. Thankfully, between calling off work and a planned week off, I did not expose my patients to whatever we had. I slept on an air mattress in a room, which I never do, often with her snuggling me, which is sweet for maybe a day. It was great, but it was hard. There was not a lot of sleep for anyone in the whole house because of the sad baby wake-ups that kept happening. The beginning of this quarantine time did not have a solid, healthy foundation, which caused a largely rocky start. However, looking back at that purely God-inspired quarantine, like sleeping in a room for 2 weeks, which is not something I've ever done or plan on doing again with my kids, or the serendipitous time off that I happened to have, I can truly see how God had it all under control despite my naivete of what was going on. Speaking of control, that's exactly the quarantine renovation project that God did on my heart. It's no news to anyone who knows me, I am a perfectionist. Perfectionism is just the socially acceptable, even lauded term for control freak. This stems from 2 of my top 5 strengths, which you can find on the Clifton Strengths Test. I'll put a link in the show notes, but my top 5, the first one is achiever, and my 5th one is responsibility. Most of the time, these are a helpful mix. I did well in school, I made it through college, no problem, and hospitals really like that when their nurses are responsible achievers. And then you add children, and things just get a lot more complicated. Motherhood has 2 major stressors for this control freak mama. 1, I am terrified of making the wrong choice, and yes, dramatic flair, ruining my kids forever. And 2, I can do all that I can, but ultimately, I cannot make my kids' choices for them as much as I wish I could. This quarantine has been a huge catalyst for God changing my heart in these areas. At the beginning, I was literally at my breaking point, trying to juggle being a mom to 3 very needy little kids, trying to keep my kindergartner and preschooler caught up with school, which I know is nowhere near as hard as those of you who have older children, so I applaud you with all of the stuff that you guys did. With counseling my kids through their huge feelings and emotional health through this isolating and scary time, trying to keep up with all the different therapies that my special needs child needs, being the wife of a man who was a pastor, trying to figure out how best to do online church, as well as being the wife of a video streaming web developer who was helping several companies try to navigate a new way to conduct business with all the lockdown on social groups. And of course, being a nurse, trying to keep up with all of the protocol changes, and having the slight worry of possibly exposing myself, my patients, or those I love to the coronavirus. This is why I have not produced much podcast content lately. I just couldn't emotionally handle another thing on my plate. But if you want to go back to Facebook on my page, the Bridge of the Faithful page on Facebook, you can find a video that I did of my very first Facebook Live and see some of the stuff that I've been working on in the background. Besides creating new content, I've been doing other things to try to make this podcast better. So if you want to take the time to go watch that, great. Of that entire list, all of the things due to parenting were the biggest stressors because all of the rest of them were not really things I could have any control over or weren't necessarily my responsibility. But my kids, they are my biggest responsibility, and I wanted to prove that I was up to the challenge. I learned very quickly, however, that I was not indeed up for the challenge. Remember how I told you that we started this whole thing on sleep deprivation? I'm pretty sure I turn into something completely different when I don't get at least 5 hours of uninterrupted sleep. Honestly, I'd even settle for 3.5 hours if it was uninterrupted. And I'm embarrassed to say that in a time of confusion and anxiety for my children, I morphed into what my friend Becky Kapitsky calls the monster. This Pinterest-loving, responsible achiever mom, now momster, set herself in a defensive position and braced herself to tackle every single to-do, therapy, lesson, and chore, all while somehow staying upright and unbruised. I had set myself up for failure and injury before I even took my first step. Our faithful and kind God silently stepped to the side so I could figure that one out on my own. When I put all of my trust in myself and my abilities, I have this bad habit of panicking. And my oldest son has inherited this amazing and dangerous ability to assess and take in the emotions of the room. Together, we made quite the pair, building tension and anxiety on top of each other like a game of handpile. I was determined to be able to check off the to-do list and help him get things done, and he was desperately wanting to find normalcy and balance in a suddenly different, more isolating world. As the pile of tasks and responsibilities grew and were less and less accomplished, the more I felt like an epic failure of a mom with more and more pressure piling on every day. There were lots of tantrums, and embarrassingly, they were from both of us. I don't know who had more, him or me. And my younger two started mimicking them to get attention. I was soon beyond my limit. I was too exhausted, too weighed down, too human to be able to continue this way. I woke up every day dreading the outbursts and regret that began the minute my husband left for work. And I finally realized the truth. Finally, I absolutely cannot do this on my own. Halfway through April, I finally realized I had to do something. Give up. I don't mean suddenly walking out and leaving, though I definitely did entertain the idea maybe once or twice. But I realized two things, and I guess two is the number of the podcast today because I'm going to say this a lot. One, that to save my relationship with my son, I needed to make loving him a choice, an intentional, powerful effort despite how anxious or overwhelmed I personally was, and make sure that he knew I was doing it. And in order to do that, I needed to, number two, stop trying to fix everything on my own. I'm a science person. I'm a nurse, an oncology nurse at that. I like to look at research, and I hear from experts before I make my next decisions. But I was using that research power to guide my choices on how to deal with the situation instead of asking God. Now hear me, I am not saying ignore the experts. I think God put people in the position for a reason and the numbers are important, but do not make experts and their results the idols to whom you worship for your success. They are human, they're not omniscient, they do not have the ability to change hearts or the power to heal wounds. God can absolutely use them to help bring about healing, but that's just it. God needed to be the one in charge of this process, not me. And when I thought I needed him to resolve the issues and hardships that my beautiful son faces every day, what I really needed was for God to break down those parts of my heart and remodel them to look more like the person he created both of us to be. During all of this, I was also a nurse. I work what we call resource, so I choose my own schedule. I let them know when I'm available and they tell me if they have a spot for me, which of course they did at this time. And it's an amazing way to work, especially with my tiny crew. It's been a huge blessing to be able balancing work and family in this way. But I have also kind of felt like an imposter when I talk about being a nurse in this COVID time because I didn't necessarily work full-time as a nurse like other people. But I work in an outpatient oncology center connected to a hospital, And with the threats and unknowns with COVID, my very immunocompromised patients were faced with a huge choice. They had to choose chemo, but be at much greater risk of dangerous COVID symptoms, or choose to not get their chemo and then risk their cancer getting worse. Honestly, I can't imagine having to make that choice myself. I don't honestly know which one I would have chosen because both were possibly life or death situations, especially at the beginning of this when we didn't have many answers. There were actually more questions than answers. Along with the stress of these decisions, we were also having protocol changes weekly, if not daily. Visitor restrictions, PPE requirements, learning nuances of new ways to communicate to avoid as much contact as possible, different ways of how we were allowed to enter the hospital. The team I work with is amazing. Their care of each other and their compassion for their patients are huge examples of why I became a nurse in the first place. Many of our patients decided to continue on to combat that awful adversary cancer. So there was definitely still work to be done. Across the street of the cancer center that I work at is the hospital that I began my nursing career 11 years ago. There are so many people over there near and dear to my heart who are much more involved in this active care of COVID patients, which is why I kind of feel like an imposter. But Facebook and text kept me aware of the amazing commitment my friends and mentors have to their calling as nurses and medical professionals. I saw stories of brave, compassionate people traveling to New York to help more affected areas. I saw anecdotes of what it was like to take care of incredibly scared and sick people who were lonely in a hospital. They were the only contact they had, and they were still able to give them a dose of humanity and dignity. I could almost tangibly feel them inch closer and closer to burnout as their emotional and physical requirements didn't ease. And I waited for that inevitable news that someone I knew had acquired a severe case of COVID. Now, this person that I talk about, my personal connection with her is not huge or majorly deep. I don't claim she was like a best friend or someone that I hang out with. However, right before I switched to my new department in the cancer center, I had the privilege of being involved in her orientation to the hospital, getting her equipped to start her new career as a nurse successfully on her own. When I learned the news that not only did she contract the disease, but was being put on a vent, it made me stop and rethink some things. I didn't know that 8 years ago, when I was training her for the exact job that would cause her and her family so much turmoil, that this job I was so proud of her gaining confidence in and becoming independent in would be the very thing that almost took her life away. And thank goodness she is off the vent. She is home. She's not fully recovered. Obviously, it's going to take a while, but she's got hope and there's a future going on there. But that's not always the case with these people. Most of us go into our jobs with a vague understanding of the risk of exposing ourselves to germs at some point, but not becoming the frontline defense during a global pandemic. And I started to realize that not every type of battle is fought on a battlefield with firepower. Not all enemies are foreign countries and foreign people, but we are all soldiers in some way or another, and I had to choose. Am I committed to fight back during this pandemic? As a nurse, I choose yes. We don't fight alone, though right now our weapons are not exactly well tested. And as a Christian, definitely yes. Sometimes God asks us to step out of the comfortable and safe to further his kingdom, and that definitely sounds like the job of an army. All of this thinking brought back the memory of a sermon that I heard, ironically, only a couple of months before all of this started. The pastor talked about one of the major causes of the spread of the gospel and Christianity during the time of the early church. Some historians credit two deadly plagues in the second and third century to be part of the rise of Christianity. When people were leaving loved ones behind, sick in their beds, left to die, or others were quarantining in their private country houses in slight luxury while people were dying around them, the Christians stayed behind to care for and nurse the dying. This loving sacrifice that to all others made no sense had a twofold impact. One, these acts of nursing people actually increased the survival rates of the people with the plagues. So those who survived had firsthand understanding of the love and mercy of Jesus and passed this faith on to their families. And two, those brave Christians followed the example that Jesus instructed all of us in John 13. As Jesus was preparing his apostles for his own death, he gave them some last pieces of advice. And when someone knows they're about to die, they're usually very intentional about the words and messages that they want to pass on for those that they love the most. This is one of those situations. John 13:34-35 was extremely important to Jesus, so much that it was one of the last things he wanted his disciples to know. He said, "So now I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples." Not everyone listening to this is on the front lines, being a nurse in a hospital, but the more we continue through this COVID journey, the more I actually see a potential spreading of the gospel just through our ability to love well. And this all brings us back to that original renovation God was doing on my heart, loving my kids well. And in order to do that, I needed to give up control. 6 weeks into my ridiculous self-sufficient linebacker mom performance, I honestly have no idea how I lasted that long. I'm often embarrassed at my intense stubbornness, but I sat down with my boys, and once again, we watched Anna sing about her need for new direction. The words of that song brought back a memory of another song from my childhood in the 90s church. "Thy word is a lamp unto my feet, and a light unto my path." Random side note, as a person who's very musically oriented, I'm a really big fan of putting verses to song because those are the ones that I never forget. But anyway, the chorus of "Thy Word" from 1984 is Psalm 119:105. The thought that strikes me most about this verse is that in my head it paints a picture of a person walking in the woods, holding a lantern, and only seeing their feet and a little bit ahead. It doesn't say, "Thy word is a high beam headlight," or "Thy word is an ultra bright hyper focus flashlight." No. Thy word lights where we're stepping and shows us if we're indeed still on the right path. It's enough for us to see if we're following the direction of the word, trusting it to show us where we are, then we'll know our footing is steady, that we're indeed in the right path, or it will let us know if we're not on the right terrain. And it gives us just enough light to let us see where the next right step will be. I'm not trying to be dramatic or even say that my situation was a worst case nightmare situation. Honestly, I've been hesitant to even share my story because my quarantine story is mostly emotional. Yes, I had to handle dealing with terrible tantrums. And yes, quarantine is an extrovert's worst nightmare. Like so many people, I just really, really struggle with trying to figure out how to juggle it all. And I didn't know how to fix anything, yet I fully expected myself to do both. And that's exactly why I decided to actually share after all, because in a time like now where loneliness is rampant, I wanted to let you know that you're not alone. If you're listening, I hope your story is more like mine, that God used discomfort and breaking of pride to help renovate your heart. But I know that some of you went through so much worse. Some of you lost people you love through COVID, or you lost them from other circumstances, but you just didn't get the opportunity to get closure or properly grieve. Some of you actually have had COVID, and you had to be either in the hospital in scary situations, likely alone, or you were stuck at home, stuck in your room for 2 weeks, and still not getting to see your family or anything like that. And that, I know from some of my friends who had to go through that, that is hard. Some of you lost so much economically, your income or your businesses, and now you don't know what's next. Some of you were or are trapped in abusive situations and you lost your outlets and your help. If that's the case, please reach out, even to me, so we can help you find some help. Some of you have battled valiantly the anxiety or depression made worse with uncertain times and scary possibilities, even worse by the loss of support through therapy and community. I respect and honor all that you've been through. While my pain was likely not nearly as deep as yours if you're in that group, I know that Psalm 119:105 still applies. I don't want you to take it from me though, because my situation is not there, but I found someone who has had a little more authority in the realm of moving on in challenging and painful times. The story of Elizabeth Elliot is one of the modern day's most major faithfulness stories. Her first husband was murdered by the very people he was trying to bring Jesus to. She later had the opportunity and said yes to go back to those people, show them forgiveness, and therefore Jesus. And she had to raise her daughter on her own. Then she lost another husband to cancer and many other dark parts of her story. If anyone had the right to be overwhelmed with grief and responsibility, it's her. She too came to the realization of doing the next right thing. She talked about it in her radio show, Gateway to Joy. In it, she said, "When I went back to my jungle station after the death of my first husband, Jim Elliott, I was faced with many confusions and uncertainties. I had a good many new roles besides that of being a single parent and a widow. I was alone in a jungle station that Jim and I had manned together. I had to learn to do all kinds of things which I was not trained or prepared in any way to do. It was a great help simply to do the next thing. I felt that way other times in my life, and I go back over and over again to an old Saxon legend, which I'm told is carved in an English parson somewhere by the sea. I don't know where this is, but this is a poem which was written about that legend. The poem says, do immediately, do it with prayer, do it reliantly, casting all care, do it with reverence, tracing his hand, who placed it before thee with earnest command. Stayed on omnipotence, safe neath his wing, leave all resultings, do the next thing. For me, all the next things have involved letting go of control. My kids are throwing nightmarish tantrums and I can't get them to make better choices. I realized I was trying too hard to push them to the right choice instead of letting them choose for themselves. I needed to pull back in trying to control my kids' behaviors. That's not my job. Completely overwhelmed trying to fit in all this school and therapy thing by myself every single day, I had to go to the complete basics and only focus on one part at a time, learning to be okay with the fact that I'm human and I can't fit everything in every day, all of the time. These are just two examples of the many things God was helping me hand over to Him. Letting go is so hard for me. I needed to be more intentional with my relationship with God, to be better trusting with Him over my own self. You would think after 33 years of life, I would have figured that out by now, but no, I needed to work harder on that. And to get into a better place, I fasted from my all-time favorite comfort food, chocolate, and I started memorizing Psalm 139, which I'm about halfway through right now. I still have such a long way to go, but starting and focusing on the next thing only, I am so much less anxious and I'm so much less overwhelmed, and I have so much more hope when I know it's one step at a time. I want to swing back to Princess Anna of Arendelle one more time. This is a topic I hope to talk more about in the future, and I think this is a good segue back into the creativity series that we're in the middle of. But I truly believe that when Colossians 1:16 says all things have been created through Him and for Him, that includes the things humans make. Yes, we're sinful, and not all things created by us will glorify God, by a long shot. However, when places like Disney make movies that help teach kids morality, you can't help but see how God places Himself in it, even when people creating it don't believe in Him. Romans 2:14 through 16 says, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively the things of the law, these, not having the law, are a law to themselves, in that they show that the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness and their thoughts alternately accusing or else defending them, on the day when, according to my gospel, God will judge the secrets of men through Christ Jesus." That's a little confusing, but it says that Gentiles who don't believe in God or in the law, they instinctively know the law. You don't have to tell people that murdering someone is wrong or that stealing is not something you should do. That is God writing His law on people's hearts. And I see that through all of the things that people create when it's something that can be glorifying to God. We won't go into the other stuff, but that's the point I'm trying to make. So when I watch or read things that are not necessarily Christian, but talk about good overcoming evil or right versus wrong, stories trying to describe what true love looks like, or anything attempting to teach kids morality, I can't help but see how God has written Himself into the story without them even knowing it. And what's the next right thing for you? Are you like me and you're trying to do it all? Or do you have overwhelming circumstances looming over your head? Did you lose a job or a person very special to you and now you don't know where God is leading you? Has God closed doors and now you don't know what your future looks like, even though just a couple months ago you thought you did? In all of these situations, God wants you to stop, breathe, and give it to Him. In exchange of freeing your hands up from the things you weren't meant to carry, He'll give you His word, a lantern, so that you can see where to go next. Not see where you'll be in 10 years, 10 months or even 10 days, as we've learned, it could definitely be that short, you won't be overwhelmed by what the future holds because you'll only see what's next. You can handle one step at a time, and the lantern will always tell you what your feet are on. Am I on the path or did I get off? What is supporting my feet? Am I where God intended me to be? If not, ask Him to get you back there. Only He can plant your feet on solid ground. I think the words that Kristen and Robert Lopez wrote for Anna were inspired by God creating all of us to inherently search for Him. Whether or not they know Him, they'll be able to look back and see how He was calling us to Him and His peace always. Here are the lyrics of the ending of that song. I won't look too far ahead. It's too much for me to take. But break it down to this next breath, this next step, this next choice is one that I can make. So I'll walk through this night, stumbling blindly toward the light, and do the next right thing. And with it done, what comes next? When it's clear that everything will never be the same again, that I'll make the choice to hear that voice and do the next right thing. Psalm 139, 23 through 24. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
This has been episode 26 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled The Next Right Thing. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/26. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast.